Welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, registered dietitian and former professional runner, Maddie Alm. Today's episode is a Q&A where I will be answering questions submitted to me beforehand by listeners. And if you would like to submit a question for any future Q&A episodes, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy today's episode. Hi, everybody. Happy Friday. I hope you're all having a great week. It's hard for me to believe that I'm about 3 weeks away from the New York Marathon. This weekend is Chicago Marathon. Lots of super exciting stuff coming up here with the Fall Marathon. So if you're somebody who's racing Chicago, good luck this weekend. I really hope you have a great race. Just don't forget to enjoy it. And if you're in the midst of training for New York or any other fall marathon, I see you and I'm right there with you. Nick and I are going to be doing our longest long run on Sunday. We're going to do a 2.5 hour roughly run, about 20 miles. So I'm definitely excited, nervous. We found this really great route in Griffith Park in LA that sort of mimics the elevation gain of New York. So one thing about New York is that it's a very hilly marathon, lots of bridges that you're going over. So being able to practice with hills, I know, is a really huge part of executing race day well. So we have this great loop where there's a pretty big hill about 4 miles in, and it's about a mile long, and then we come down the other side. So something else that I have learned from teammates who've run hilly marathons is that it's just as important to practice the downhills as it is the uphills, because the downhills can really like wreck your quads if you're not used to it. So I've definitely been really focusing in my strength training sessions on quad and hip strength and glute strength, and then really making sure we're including both uphills and downhills in our long runs, which is going really well so far. It's fun to see like fitness coming back every week. I like looking at my like little stats and seeing that my heart rate's a little lower and my pace is a little faster. So I'm starting to feel a little more confident, at least that I can finish the marathon. I know I can finish it, but definitely has felt daunting. So I think this next long run is going to be a really big confidence boost, knowing that if I can run, you know, 20 miles, I'm going to feel good that I can finish the marathon. I know, I'm sure people listening to this who have run a marathon are laughing, being like, no, marathon starts at mile 20, which is fair. But at least I know that I'm in the single digits left to go, which is encouraging. We've also been really practicing our fueling and hydration. So I have that super dialed in. We're at like just over 60 grams of carbs per hour for our long runs, drinking about 400 milliliters of fluid and averaging about 500 milligrams of sodium per hour, which is really cool. I did a little like sweat test on myself with this company called Nyx, and it was really cool. It's sort of like a patch that you put on your arm, and then there's a real-time sensor that connects to an app on your phone. So that gave me my estimated sweat rate in terms of how many milliliters or ounces of fluids per hour that I'm losing and how many electrolytes, how much sodium I'm losing, which was cool to see. And I was actually pretty spot on with my fueling and hydration, which was encouraging. So feeling really good about that. And yeah, if you're going to be in New York for the marathon weekend, I'm going to be co-hosting a little like pre-race shakeout on Saturday, on November 1st, from a coffee shop near Central Park. Chris Lee, who was on the podcast about a month or so ago, he is co-hosting it with me, and he has very generously offered to buy coffee for anyone who's attending. But it's just going to be like a short 5K kind of shakeout run. Anyone is welcome. Like, my family is going to be there. Nick's family is going to be there. Some of them aren't even running. They're just going to come hang out, like walk. So please feel free to come by. It's going to be around 9:30. You know, and then I would say we'll be back and hanging out around like 11 in general. So if you're in the area, please come by. I'd love to meet you in person and just come and say hi. It's going to be a really fun way just to kind of do a little community outreach, which I'm excited about. And then, as I've mentioned before, I'm a charity runner for Track Girls, which is an incredible nonprofit organization working to create resources to keep young girls in sport through track and field empowerment programs. Something that I'm definitely passionate about. Of course, as a dietitian, I see how young girls in sport who don't have resources are impacted and how it can really affect their long-term health and well-being, and just ability to stay involved in the sport. So it's something that's really close to me personally. And I just hope that if you're interested in supporting me, you'll consider donating. Really, any and all donations are so appreciated. I'm about halfway with my fundraising attempts. I'm trying to raise $4,500, and we're getting pretty close. I'm starting to feel the heat with that a little bit. Really, any and all donations are so helpful. And I am partnering with Hedda's to put together a giveaway. For every $50 that you donate, you get one entry to win a race day support package. So that includes a free pair of shoes from Hedda's, a t-shirt. It includes a race day strategy session with me. So just like a 30-minute Zoom call where we can talk about if you have any races coming up, how to fuel preparing for those. And then a couple of other little goodies, like some skincare things from brands who support women's sports. So, you know, if you donate $100, you get two entries, etc. If you are in a place to be able to donate, again, would really appreciate any and all support here. I will put the link to register in my show notes to register for the shakeout run, which is free, of course. We're just trying to get a general head count, so there's no pressure. You can register and not show up. We just kind of want to get a feel for who's interested in coming. And then I will also put the link to donate in the show notes if that's something that you're able to do. But again, as always, thank you for being here, and we can go ahead and dive into today's questions. Okay, today's first question comes from Avery. Avery says, "Hello, I'm a busy college student runner who relies on prepackaged foods often. I have a couple of favorites that I grab when I'm out of time to make my own food. I was curious to get your opinion on these items and if I'm using them at the appropriate times. I typically love grabbing RX bars before morning workouts and also eat them as afternoon snacks. Occasionally I reach for Verb energy bars, but have noticed they make me feel kind of flat on the run. After runs, I will often grab a Slate coffee drink for post-run recovery, and lately I've been eating Perfect bars after runs, but I'm not sure if those have the right ratio of carbs and protein. Do you have any other recommendations for convenience foods? Lots of bars make my stomach upset, so I try to stick to simple ingredients." Yeah, this is a really fantastic question. There's a couple things that I want to break down here. I think the first thing is that bars are okay. You know, it's okay to use convenience foods. It's okay to use prepackaged items, especially for busy runners, student athletes. It's just going to be more limited in terms of what you have access to. You're going to be gone all day. You're packing food for the whole day. So if you aren't able to refrigerate things, you know, it's just convenient to grab a shelf stable item like a bar. And that's totally fine. There's ways that we can incorporate bars that can help give us what we need. And they're definitely something that can be a great tool. I will say, as a dietitian, I see runners rely pretty heavily on bars just because they feel like that's the only option that they have that's convenient for a snack, or because it's something that they kind of consider like a safe food. So I have, you know, if athletes are struggling with disordered eating, bars actually tend to be a food that they feel comfortable eating. So there can be a lot of reasons why I see runners rely heavily on bars. And again, first and foremost, I don't want to demonize bars. They're absolutely fine to include. But I will say there are some bars that I prefer over others, and it also depends on when and how you're using them. So a good example, Avery mentioned that she has an RX bar in the morning before runs. I actually don't recommend RX bars for pre-workout because they're very high in protein, fat, and fiber, and they're not very high in carbohydrates. So that's kind of the opposite of what we want to be focusing on for pre-run. If we're looking at a bar to have before a run, we really want to prioritize a bar that's high in carbohydrates and that is low in fat, fiber, and protein. That excess fat, fiber, and protein, it takes longer to digest, and it can take away from your body's ability to access those carbohydrates that we actually need to fuel the session. And it also depends on how close to the run you're eating this. If you're having this RX bar, you know, 3 hours beforehand, that's probably fine, but it's also probably not enough before your run. And we might need to have something else closer to the run to make sure you have enough carbohydrates on board for fuel. So for an RX bar, I think a good time to incorporate something like that would be either post-run or maybe for a snack in between meals during the day, depending on what your schedule allows. You know, another question she had was about like Verb energy bars. They make her feel flat on her runs. Again, this is something I would take a look at in terms of how close to your run you're eating this. For anyone who's not familiar with Verb energy bars, they are caffeinated. They're like a caffeinated granola bar. Ingredients wise, you know, generally I would say fine, but again, most of the Verb bars don't have a ton of carbohydrates. They're a pretty small bar. So yes, we're getting some caffeine, but we're also not really getting enough carbohydrates for fuel. So it would make sense to me that you might feel a little bit flat on your run. So if we're thinking about a pre-run bar, if we're thinking about something within an hour of the run, some of the recommendations I have would be just like a Clif Kid Z bar. Like I love those little Z bars, like the iced oatmeal bar is one of my favorites. They're really good alternatives from that brand Made Good. They have them. Trader Joe's has a version. So something like that where it's a pretty simple bar, probably have closer to like 30 to 40 grams of carbs, really low fiber, really low protein. Those are perfect for pre-run. Clif Bar, I would say, is something kind of in between. That's going to be a much higher carb option. There's usually about 10 grams of protein in a Clif Bar. So again, maybe that's one that's good for like 2 hours out from a run, maybe even 90 minutes out from a run. If we have less than an hour before a run, I recommend keeping protein under 10 grams and keeping fiber under 5 grams. If you have more like 90 minutes to 2 hours, about that amount, 10 grams of protein, 5 grams of fiber would be okay. Again, depending on the person. And if you have more time than that, then of course, you know, you can have a little more earlier on and then follow that more simple option closer to the run. So those are some bar alternatives, I would say. Other good ones would be like the Nature's Bakery fig bars. They also have a gluten-free version. Also the Belvita cracker bars. Those are great to have for pre-run. And then Bobo's Oats. They have like a Bobo's Oat Bite that's a little smaller. That's a great one for pre-run. So some of those I think are good for pre-run options. If we're thinking about other bars for later in the day, what I'm trying to look for in bars usually, if it's going to be a snack, it needs to have, you know, again, at least 10 grams of protein, about 30 to 40 grams of carbs is preferable. And what I'm also looking at is the ingredients list. So Avery mentioned that a lot of bars tend to hurt her stomach. I'm not looking at the ingredients list in terms of like quote unquote clean food. I'm looking for alternative sweeteners. That is what tends to hurt people's stomachs when they eat bars, because a lot of bars out there will say like zero sugar, no added sugar, but they're still sweet. And the issue with that is they're adding something like stevia or monk fruit or a lot of times sugar alcohols, which our body actually can't digest. Our body's not able to break those down. They're called non-nutritive sweeteners because we can't get any calories out of them because we can't digest them. The problem is we don't know a ton about these alternative sweeteners and how they might impact our gut health long term. And we also do tend to see them be gut irritants, especially sugar alcohols. That's a huge one. So a lot of the protein bars out there that are zero sugar use sugar alcohols, like Bear Bells is a really good example. Super popular protein bar, but it is high in those alternative sweeteners that can really hurt your stomach. Same with things like No Cow or the Think Thin bars. I think they're now rebranded as Think Bars. All of those use those kind of gut irritating sugar alternatives, and a lot of bars do too. So you can check the ingredients list. Anything that ends in OL is a sugar alcohol. So that's something like xylitol, sorbitol. Those are going to be things that are sugar alcohols. And now they've actually changed the regulations for nutrition labels to include sugar alcohol content. So under carbohydrates, you will see like if there are sugar alcohols in a food, you'll be able to see how many grams. If there's any, in my opinion, I would avoid it. But definitely less than 5 grams of sugar alcohols. That can really, really wreak havoc on your gut. And then again, for some people, it is like the stevia or the monk fruit that can cause issues. I personally don't like the taste of those things, so those are not something I'd want to eat before a run. But again, we do want those carbs, and our body does know how to break down sugar. So if we see honey or brown rice syrup or agave or even just plain old sugar, our body's going to be a lot better at breaking that down and using it for fuel, and it's not going to hurt our stomach as much. This is where I would say when people ask me about sugar content, they're worried about sugar content. there is a time and a place for sugar for athletes. And pre-run is definitely one of those times when our body is going to just immediately use that as fuel for the run itself. We want it to be simple. We want it to be easy to eat. And we do want it to spike our blood sugar because that's how we're going to have fuel for the run itself. So those are situations where a bar that contains real sugar is a good option. Some of the other bars, like the RX bar that Avery mentioned, the Perfect bars, you know, those are going to have a good amount of protein and fats, maybe again, not a ton of carbohydrates, but some of those are going to be better for post-run options or for during the day options. And then other ways that you can maybe balance out a bar to add a little bit more nutrient density, you could pair a bar with a piece of fruit. So for example, the RX bar, you could pair that with an apple. And the Perfect bar, you could pair that with a banana. You know, those are just as grab-and-go friendly, but we're getting a little more nutrients out of that. We're getting a little bit more from that snack. And then I think something else to think about is, are there alternatives that are just as easy in terms of grab and go, but aren't necessarily a bar? So what comes to mind for me would be like trail mix. Trail mix is essentially a broken down bar. You can buy prepackaged trail mix, which is great. You can also make your own. When you work for a college as a dietitian, it's funny, like we went to Costco and someone asked if we were preschool teachers. You're getting things like gummies and applesauce and, you know, simple things because that's what athletes need. But we would get a bunch of stuff to make our own trail mix. So we would combine some type of mixed nuts. A lot of times it was like peanuts and almonds and maybe cashews. And then we would do chocolate chips. We would do craisins or like dried cranberries. And then we would do some cereals, so like the Quaker's oat squares. We would add those to the trail mix to add more carbs. You could also add like pretzels or popcorn. So you can kind of make your own trail mix, and that's going to give you essentially the same idea as a bar, but it's going to be something that's a little more whole food based. Dried fruit is a great way to pair carbs with anything. So like cheese sticks or beef sticks, like the Chomps meat sticks are great for grab and go. Obviously cheese sticks have to be refrigerated, so that can definitely be a limitation. But there are other alternatives that are just as grab and go friendly that aren't bars. So maybe just exploring some of those options as well, thinking about ways you can branch out a bit so you're not having multiple bars a day. I do think that's something that, you know, it sounds like Avery might be having more than one bar per day, which in that case, I would say, okay, let's think about what would be a time where the bar would be the priority. So maybe that's pre-run. And is there another time during the day we can switch to something that's not a bar, maybe a bar alternative or maybe a more whole food option? So those are a couple of parameters I have as a dietitian when I'm working with an athlete who uses bars, but I certainly don't want you to feel like you're making the wrong choice or, you know, doing something wrong by grabbing a bar. If the option is a bar or nothing, I would pick the bar every time. So that's first and foremost the priority. Eat the food, eat the snack, eat the pre-run, post-run fuel. And then when you're in the habit of doing that consistently, thinking about how can I maybe switch this up a little bit? That's a really great question, Avery. Thanks for submitting that one. Okay, this next question says, should I consume 60 grams of carbs per hour during all of my training long runs? I plan to practice this a few times before race day, but for most long runs, I've been eating less than this because gels are expensive. Is this okay, or do you recommend following your race day fueling plan for even shorter long runs, 10 to 15 miles? Thank you. This person did put shorter in quotes, which I would agree with that. 10 to 15 miles is not a short run. It's maybe a shorter version of a long run you would do for a marathon build, but it is still a long run. So I'm glad they put that in quotations. Just you guys can't see that. Yeah, this is a great question as well. So there's a couple advantages to fueling consistently during your long runs. Something I've mentioned before is, of course, practicing for race day. First and foremost, we always want to make sure that we've practiced our race day fueling strategy in training. We want to make sure that we have our approach nailed down. We know how it feels. Our body knows how to take those things and actually use them for fuel. So of course, practicing for race day is a big part of that. And it sounds like this person is planning to do that, which is great. The other piece to fueling during long runs consistently, so this is where fueling on every long run is what I would recommend. You can train your body to tolerate more grams of carbs per hour, just like you can train your muscles to tolerate more mileage, tolerate longer runs. You can train your gut to tolerate more carbohydrates, but you have to be consistent with practicing. those adaptations don't just happen in 3 weeks, in those last three long runs before your big race. It happens over weeks. So if you have a 12-week training block, over the course of 12 weeks, you give your body the best chance to adapt by fueling during all of your runs that are over 75 minutes. That's my recommendation for any marathoner. Basically, what's happening is we only have a certain amount of glucose transporters in the GI tract. And if those become oversaturated, we can no longer absorb those carbohydrates and they kind of sit there. They're more concentrated than what our body likes to see. So it sends water into the GI tract to try to dilute it. And that's what causes a lot of those GI issues during runs, that kind of like bloating, cramping, diarrhea, all of that. It's caused by not having enough glucose transporters and oversaturating the ones that we do have by taking in too many grams of carbs per hour. So for somebody who's not consistently practicing fueling during runs, they're going to hit that saturation point a lot earlier, and that's going to be a major limiting factor on race day. If we can only tolerate 20 to 40 grams of carbs per hour during our training runs, and we're trying to get up to 60 plus on race day, chances are we're not going to have given our body the opportunity to adapt because we haven't had the chance to put more transporters in. Whereas if we're fueling every time, the first time we take in a smaller amount of carbs, our body's like, okay, we're going to be taking in some carbs during our run. So it puts in more glucose transporters, it inserts more into the small intestine, into the GI tract. So now it's like, okay, now I'm ready. So the next run, you add a little more carbs and your body's able to absorb that. And then it's like, ooh, let's put more in, etc. So as your training goes on and as you fuel during your runs, your body puts in more glucose transporters. And that means you can tolerate more carbohydrates per hour, which is going to really help you for race day. So I talked about this in one of my newsletters recently, my Sunday brunch clubs. I usually try to highlight some type of like recent science-related thing in nutrition. I talked about a research study that came out at the beginning of the year that looked at participants in the Boston Marathon. And they found that if an athlete was taking in 60 to 90 grams of carbs per hour, they were more likely to finish in under 3 hours, and they were less likely to end up in a medical tent during the run. So the more carbohydrates you can take in per hour, not only can help improve your race performance, but can actually help your race go more smoothly and prevent any of those disruptions that might cause you to even not finish the race. And the best way to give yourself the chance to do that on race day is by practicing consistently with carbohydrates. That said, this person mentioned gels are expensive. They absolutely are. So what you can do is you can kind of compromise. If you know what gels you're using for race day, so for example, let's say somebody's going to use Morton for race day. Morton is like $4.50 per gel. So probably not going to be feasible to practice with that for 12 weeks. But if you know that it works for you, what you can do is you can use a cheaper alternative during your training, except for those few long runs like leading up to the race itself. So thinking about making sure you do a run through of exactly the products you're going to use for race day is important, especially if you've already tried Morton before and you know that it works for you. Great. You can kind of wait to use it exclusively on your runs until it's closer to when you're doing that run through for race day. So like, for example, what I did for New York was I tried a new gel each week when I had a long run. And my first few long runs were only about, 10 miles. So on the lower end of long runs, they were just about 70 minutes or a little over. So what I started doing was I took a gel at halfway and I just started trying different gels, just seeing how my body felt with them, seeing what I liked in terms of flavor and consistency. Then as I added mileage, I added another gel. So maybe I would do a gel at 40 minutes, and then again at an hour 20. And then, I would continue to increase until I got up to that 60 plus grams of carbs per hour. Then for the next couple weeks, so for me, like this would be last week and this upcoming weekend, I am going to be using exactly what I plan to use for race day. That will allow me to make sure that that interval still feels good, that amount of carbs still feels good with the actual product that I plan to use. And so that's a way that you can kind of save money and still practice with that fueling, Because to go back to the crux of this question, yes, I recommend every long run, any run that's over 75 minutes, practicing with your goal target of grams per hour for race day. This is for long runs. For workouts, again, that's something to consider with fueling during training, is if you're doing a workout between the warm-up and the cool-down and the workout itself, a lot of times we're out there for over 75 minutes. Just practicing having a gel between the warm-up and the workout is great. You could also use something like fruit snacks. So like, for example, I change my shoes in between the warm-up and the workout, so it's easy for me to eat a packet of fruit snacks in between, get the same amount of carbs as I would from a gel for like 1/10 of the price. So that's also something to think about. I do encourage you, if you have like a longer tempo or something, at least practicing once taking a gel at race pace. It's very different taking a gel when you're running easy for a long run than it is taking a gel when you're actually running race effort. You're breathing harder, you're moving your arms faster, your gait is a little bit different. So just kind of getting a feel for that, so it's not a total shock on race day when you're like, whoa, this is a little harder than I thought to take this gel. Especially like, you know, for me, I'm taking a gel every 30 minutes. So I just need to make sure it's something that I know what it feels like to do. So that's, you know, something else to think about with practicing during your workouts. Do you need to do that on every single workout? Not always. It definitely depends on the length of your session and what would make sense for you logistically, but at least practicing it once, if you have like a longer tempo, considering trying out a gel at race effort, maybe halfway through the tempo. So if you had a 10-mile tempo, maybe trying to take a gel at 5 miles and see how that feels at marathon effort. The last thing I'll say is I found a new gel that I'm loving right now. It's called Never Second. A bunch of people recommended it to me, sponsor. I am loving this gel because it's super thin. It has 200 milligrams of sodium per gel. And it's isotonic, so you don't have to take it with fluids, which is super convenient for a marathon if you're needing to take it between aid stations. And it also has 30 grams of carbs per gel. So by taking 2 per hour, I'm hitting that 60 grams of carb minimum. And then when I combine that with the electrolyte drink, I'll be just over 60 grams of carbs per hour, which is what feels good for me and about where I want to be. So that's really convenient for me. So if you need something like that to help, if you're struggling to get in enough gels, something like that, a higher carb gel can be really helpful. Okay, sticking with our marathon theme, this next question says, what is a good strategy for taking in fluids during a marathon? How much, how often? Trying to decide if I should carry water and electrolytes with me as I run, how much to rely on fluids provided on the course. Thank you and good luck with your marathon. Thank you. Thank you for the good luck wishes. Good luck to you as well. It sounds like you're training for a marathon. Okay, so here is what I'm doing, and this is something I've worked with a lot of athletes on as well. Going back to what I just said in the previous answer, practicing with fluids is so important. If you're not used to drinking fluids during a run, it can be a little dicey on race day if you don't really know how that feels. So what we've been doing is I have a hydration vest with 2 bottles, and I am filling that with water and electrolytes so that I can kind of practice with getting in electrolytes while I'm running. And what I do is every time my watch beeps for the mile, I take about 3 to 4 sips. And what that has ended up for me is averaging around 400 milliliters of fluids per hour, which is about what we want. We want at least 300, you know, usually between 300 and 600 milliliters per hour, depending on the person, sometimes more if we can tolerate it. And then again, thinking about electrolytes, you know, we want to make sure we're getting around 300 milligrams of sodium per hour at minimum. So first and foremost, with practicing that, you just want to get a feel for how that feels for you physically. What is it like to drink fluids while you're running? What rate of drinking feels good to you? My biggest tip is never to chug fluids. You should always be taking sips. Be really mindful of swallowing air when you're drinking water. It's tempting if you're thirsty, especially to chug. We don't want to do that because we end up swallowing a bunch of air and we also take in too many fluids at once. So we end up feeling sloshy and that can cause more of like the side stitches. That can also cause more of the GI issues later in the race. So we want to be very methodical with how we're drinking fluids. We want it to be small sips consistently. So over the course of an hour, you're taking in what you need to, but it doesn't feel like you're drinking that much because you're only taking a few sips every time your watch beeps for the mile. So that has worked really well for me personally. And also just that prompt of my watch beeping reminds me to take some sips. That's something athletes tend to struggle with, is they forget to drink. And then it's been an hour and they're like, oh shoot, I meant to drink this water bottle. And then they try to chug it. And that's when we run into issues. So there are watches where you can set timers on your watch to go off every 10 minutes or every 5 minutes or whatever, and then that can help prompt you to sip. Or if you have it set where your watch goes off every K or every mile, just taking some sips when it beeps. For the marathon, if you do not plan to carry fluids, it's definitely important to think about sodium. So like for me, for example, I've been using Scratch on my runs, but in New York, it's going to be Gatorade Endurance. Also probably not going to be drinking as much from the cups themselves. So thinking about how can I get sodium from my fuel, that's where for me those Never Second gels are great, because it's 200 milligrams of sodium per gel. So by getting 2 gels per hour, I'm in that 400 milligrams of sodium per hour range, which is great. So whether or not I get electrolytes, that will be totally fine for me. So thinking about tools like that, you know, there are salt sticks, like salt chews, there's capsules. Most capsules and chews are fairly low sodium. They're only about 50 milligrams per serving. Precision Hydration does have a 250 milligram sodium cap. So that's also something that you could use, like taking that one per hour or whatever to supplement if you're getting things from electrolytes or gels. But that's definitely something that you want to think about. And then what I generally tell people on course, in terms of the on course hydration, I would recommend taking something from every aid station. Every aid station is going to be around every mile. So that's going to kind of equate to what you've been practicing, where you're taking a few sips every mile. When you grab the cup, obviously it's much harder to drink out of a cup while you're running. Just try to pinch the whole top of the cup and sip. Again, try not to chug. Try to be mindful of air that you're swallowing. You do not have to finish the whole cup. Again, just take a few sips, toss the cup. You don't need to finish the whole thing. That can be a little tricky. And then if you are somebody who wants to use on-course electrolytes, which I will be doing, I recommend alternating. So every other station, grab electrolytes and then water. Kind of alternate between the two. I technically don't need to because I have enough sodium from my gels, but I want a little bit more carbs per hour, so I am going to grab, you know, the Gatorade Endurance every other station. Which brings me to my last tip, which is research your on-course nutrition well beforehand and practice with it. If you're going to use what's available on the course, at least do one run where you're practicing with that hydration, just because you, again, want to know what to expect and you want to see how your body responds. You don't want to try anything for the first time on race day. They'll typically list the flavor, so make sure it's a flavor that you like and can tolerate. You know, it's lemon lime for me for New York, which is something that's like pretty similar to what I've been using with Scratch. So I'll try Gatorade Endurance on Sunday in a couple days. But, you know, just making sure that you've practiced with your on-course nutrition, you have a general strategy for how frequently you're taking sips. And that way on race day, you can just replicate that with what's available on the course. I have heard from a couple of the big major marathons as well that the first few aid stations are super crowded. It can be a little difficult to get over and grab a cup. So some of the athletes I work with will bring a handheld that they don't mind throwing away and carry that for the first maybe 5 miles of the race and just take some sips every, you know, every mile or so. And then when it starts to thin out a little bit or the crowds get a little bit easier to navigate, you can toss that handheld and start using the on-course nutrition. But might be something that you think about too, especially like New York and Chicago. Those are a couple that I've heard where it's just really hard to navigate that first couple miles, and it might be tricky to even grab liquids on course. Okay, awesome. This last question for today says, I'm taking an introductory level nutrition class at my university right now, and we tested our total cholesterol levels for a lab assignment. Mine was borderline on the high end. This was confusing to me since I'm so active and don't have any family history of high cholesterol. Should endurance athletes limit saturated fat intake, such as getting low-fat Greek yogurt instead of full-fat, or using olive oil instead of butter? Or is this not something to be concerned about? Yeah, this is a fantastic question, and I wanted to answer this one today because I actually got a couple cholesterol questions. So hopefully this kind of answers a couple of other people's questions as well. And I've touched on this before, but something that we see in athletes is that underfueling can actually cause elevated cholesterol. It's a protective mechanism for our body when it feels like it doesn't have enough fuel on board. So we actually can see elevated cholesterol if we're not eating enough. And dietary fats is a really important tool for eating enough for athletes. So I do not recommend trying to eat less or eat less fat for most athletes. It really depends on the person. Typically I'll go through someone's typical day and take a look at what they're eating. Most of the time we're underdoing it in terms of calories and we're underdoing it in terms of carbs. So our body is trying to compensate for that lack of available fuel. So in those cases, I think cutting out fats would probably make the issue worse and definitely would not help. The other thing to think about in terms of cholesterol is that it's needed for hormone production. So, a question I would ask this athlete is, do you have a regular period? If the answer is no, then that would tell me it's probably relating back to that underfueling, maybe even REDS, relative energy deficiency in sport. We do see high cholesterol levels with athletes who have REDS. So again, thinking about big picture, does it look like we're struggling with energy availability? And if so, correcting the energy deficit alone can help improve cholesterol levels. A couple of other things with cholesterol, thyroid issues can cause high cholesterol. So if you haven't had your thyroid checked, definitely recommend doing that, asking your doctor to check your TSH level, thyroid stimulating hormone. If that level is elevated, which really functionally we consider above 2 elevated, most doctors won't flag it until it's above 4.5. But just from a functional standpoint, we operate at our best and our thyroid's operating at its best if TSH is kind of between 1 and 2. So that's something just to keep in mind, maybe advocating a little for yourself there for getting some more testing done if it's outside of that range, asking for a more full thyroid workup. That was something, for me, I have a little bit of elevated cholesterol. Part of that for me is family history, but part of that is related to the fact that I found out I have Hashimoto's, hypothyroid. So that's something that I just monitor. And I noticed when I was on medication and able to manage that a little better, my cholesterol came down. So sometimes elevated cholesterol can be a symptom of something else. So if it doesn't make sense to you that you have elevated cholesterol, again, just asking for a more complete blood workup, taking a look at hormones even, that can be something that's important. PCOS, you may be more likely to have elevated cholesterol. So getting thyroid and hormones checked both can be super helpful. And then in terms of actually dietary strategies to reduce cholesterol for runners, limiting saturated fat intake can impact cholesterol, but not always. So maybe taking a look at your fiber intake. Are you eating enough fruits and vegetables? Are you getting about 25 grams of fiber daily, depending on, what your needs are? Those are some things to take a look at. Are you eating consistently throughout the day? Are you eating, every 3 to 4 hours? Are you balancing meals with carbs, color, fat, and protein? Are you balancing snacks with carbs and protein? A lot of those things can all impact cholesterol levels. So just taking a look at how we're doing there. But generally speaking, for most runners that I'm working with, if they have elevated cholesterol, it can be genetic, which for this person, they said they don't have a family history. So that makes me lean more towards either underfueling or an underlying health issue. And definitely something I run into as a dietitian that can be frustrating is I've had very healthy athletes whose doctors have told them that, your cholesterol is high, you need to cut these things out. The reality is for some of those athletes, it is just genetic. There's nothing that they can do about it. They're doing everything from a lifestyle perspective to manage it. And a lot of times the cholesterol that the doctor considers elevated is actually not even a concern in terms of elevated risk for cardiovascular disease, based on other risk factors. So, asking more questions or seeking out a professional who can maybe help adjust things a little more specifically to your lifestyle can be helpful. And the other thing that frustrates me is most of the times when doctors tell you like eat less fat, they don't ask what you're eating right now. They don't know how much fat you're eating. You might be eating no fat and that might be part of the problem. But they just, you know, assume and say like, don't eat as many carbs, don't eat as much fat, which actually might make the issue worse. So if you're getting confusing advice like that, potentially reaching out to a dietitian that can help you kind of maybe dig a little bit deeper into what's going on and help give you some more specific suggestions to make those changes to optimize your health based on what is really a concern, what you're currently doing, and where are some areas that you can make some swaps. But yeah, I would say generally speaking, often not something to be concerned about, but definitely worth following up with a doctor or a dietitian to kind of understand more about why you specifically might be seeing elevated cholesterol. Thank you guys so much for submitting those questions. I hope you have a great weekend. Good long runs if you have them. Good luck in Chicago if you're racing. Next week will be an interview with Elise Cranny. She is an incredible athlete in person and has some really inspiring things to say. So I hope to see you guys next week for Elise's episode. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to submit a question for next Q&A, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. I will put the link to register for the New York City pre-race shakeout in the show notes, as well as the link to donate if that's something you're interested in doing. And otherwise, I hope to see you next week for Elise Cranny's episode. Thanks so much, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.